Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. I'm joined by the voice of the Shockers, Mike Kennedy, and we're going to talk about Eric Wedge, the new baseball coach at Wichita State. Mike, what was your initial reaction to the hiring?
Excitement, exhilaration, and I want to say, you know, anything I say about Eric's hiring, I feel like I kind of need to say it doesn't reflect in any way on Todd Butler or on other people out there who I know are probably interested in the position, who I have a lot of respect for, and some I even consider friends. To me, Eric Wedge is just in a unique class almost by himself as far as all of the abilities and characteristics he brings to it, and I just don't think there was anyone out there that could have been a better choice for this position.
He came here fall of 86, summer of 86. He was not really a super highly recruited guy, I've discovered, as I kind of went back and did some research. Jeans told the story. It came down to they had to beat out Valparaiso for Eric Wedge's services, and there were a lot of catchers that year. But he played really well in the fall and started from the beginning as a freshman. What are your first memories of him? How do you kind of remember him, you know, making his early statement as a Shocker?
I just remember he was a very good player right from the beginning, and I was somewhat aware of his recruitment because we were in Terre Haute for a series with Indiana State in '86, and this guy approached the coaches and said, "Hey, there's this guy up in Fort Wayne that I know about, and I think he's getting overlooked," and he gave him some kind of a video. I think you mentioned your story for the Roundhouse, some kind of a crude video that he had of him, and they went from there to talking with scouts who were aware of him but didn't think he was going to sign. And you know, at the beginning, he was a very good player right from the start, but I don't know if I really started to appreciate his leadership and some of those intangible things until maybe later in his sophomore and certainly in his junior year here.
The word that everybody has always used when they describe Eric is presence. Tell me a little bit about that from your perspective when you talk about the leadership qualities and the command he had in the dugout and all those kind of things. What were your observations?
I've likened him to Xavier McDaniel as the two student athletes that I've been around in my time here that led in a lot of ways by example, by their sheer effort, and to some degree almost by intimidation, because it was difficult. I don't think their teammates felt like, seeing how hard they practiced, how hard they played, how hard they worked at everything, that they could possibly face them if they didn't give it the same kind of effort. He helped create, I mean, that was certainly in the baseball program anyway, but he helped enhance that attitude, that approach to things that made everybody around him better.
He was a catcher at Wichita State, obviously. Are you in the camp of, well, that really helps? Catchers seem, that seems to be a position that produces a lot of good coaches / managers.
I think it does fit into the category. You know, there's been this discussion over the years in all sports about how players who maybe weren't quite as gifted, just tremendous talents that had to think about the game a little more, analyze it a little more, work at it, make good coaches. I think catchers, just naturally by the nature of their position, have to do that. They have to, they're kind of seeing the entire field. They're giving defensive signals sometimes for the entire field, and it all starts with that one-on-one pitcher against hitter thing and what pitches to call. And so, I think that certainly having that kind of look at the game, that kind of view of the game, certainly gets somebody started in the right direction to possibly be a coach.
Was he the kind of athlete during his time here you would have identified him as a future big league manager, coach kind of person?
Yes. I mean, I don't know if I really thought about it much at the time because, you know, it looked like he was going to be a big league player, first of all, but certainly you could see those characteristics. You know, one of the things that Brent Chemnitz told me about him was, you know, he's had a lot of outstanding catchers here, but maybe more than any of them, Eric was the one who wasn't just interested in working with the starting pitchers or the guys that got the most innings. He took an interest in everybody on the staff. I mean, just down to the freshmen that weren't even pitching much. And I saw an example of that, that 1989 season. We were on a trip going somewhere east in the valley, and we had a stop at KU for a game first, and I had kind of lost my voice, and I knew if I tried to do that game, I'd probably lose it for good for the weekend. So we picked up a feed of the KU broadcast, and Scott Shoemaker actually sat in with them to give a little Shocker perspective, and Gene let me sit in the dugout. And Brian Bizzard, who was one of the freshmen, got in the game that night. And after an inning, they came into the dugout, and Eric came over to Brian and said, "Hey, when I call for the breaking ball, don't shake me off. That's a better pitch than you think it is. Believe in it. Trust yourself and throw it when I call for it." That kind of thing. I just saw how he worked with the pitchers that way and really helped develop them.
Jim Newland was another one that I've heard stories of over the years. He was, of course, the great, great closer, great reliever on that team, but he was a guy who needed a lot of reinforcement, a lot of boosting. And Brent Chemnitz and other people have told me the stories about how Eric was instrumental in telling Newman that I think one of the stories was he was overlooked for the All-American teams, using that as a motivating factor. Those kind of things, I think, are more examples of Eric's kind of leadership and presence.
Yeah, that particular one, we went to Omaha in 89, and that's when the All-America teams came out. And Jim had this incredible year, but back then there were only a couple of All-America teams, and they basically had three or four pitcher slots. They didn't designate relief pitcher, starting pitcher, and Jim got left off, and he was really down, really disappointed. And they had a practice, and he was due to throw a bullpen that day, and Eric pulled Brent aside, said, "Let me catch Newland's bullpen," which starting catchers normally hate to have to catch bullpens, just extra work and strain. And he get down the bullpen with him, and every pitch he threw, "Attaboy, Jim, you're going to show them what a mistake they made. They really screwed up, leaving you off the All-America." Got him all pumped up, and he had three saves in the World Series, which was a record at the time.
This was 30 years ago. Let's run through a little bit of Eric Wedge's bio. He was on those teams from 87, 88, 89, 88. Shockers go to Omaha, lose a very painful game. Two games to Arizona State. Come back in 89 and win it. He had a real famous hit in a rain delay game against Florida State. He was on every All-Valley team, All-American, member of the Shocker Sports Hall of Fame, the Valley Hall of Fame, on and on. So just a great, great resume. Let's go back to that 1989 team for people who may not know much about it. Describe that team. What made it that kind of special group?
Well, first of all, they were very talented, and they started out the year with that sort of mission or determination from having come up a game short of the championship game the year before, that they were going to go back. And they lost their very first game at Arkansas in like February, and then won 20-some in a row. And from that point on, you knew they were special. But they had some key injuries late in the year. Jeff Bonacquista came home on a wild pitch late in the regular season, and the catcher decided to throw at the last minute, hit him in the kneecap and broke his kneecap. Mike Lansing, who was an All-American shortstop, went down with a back injury, taking batting practice for the regional, so they were without him. Bryant Winslow, the first baseman, suffered kind of a stress fracture in his lower leg late in the season, played through it until it actually broke all the way in a collision at first base in the championship game. So they had some of that they were dealing with and had to keep moving guys around, but they weren't very deep by the end of the season, but just had that incredible determination that they were going to get there and do what they'd set out to do.
Eric Wedge hit in the middle of that lineup, I think third and fourth, kind of depending on the situations. His role, his presence on that team, how would you describe what he filled?
When you talk about presence, this is, I don't know, it may be legend, but I believe it's a true story. In the regional at Fresno, Wichita State started 2-0 and then lost to Michigan in the winner's bracket final, and they had to turn around within just an hour and a half or a couple of hours and play Fresno State, that was the host team that had four or five future major leaguers on their team, in an elimination game. And it's a tight game, kind of mid to late game, and Eric was coming up, might have been a tie or whatever, and Fresno State brings in a relief pitcher, And I am told, everybody swears this is a true story, he walked back to the dugout and said, "What's this guy's name?" And somebody told him and said, "Why?" And he said, "I like to know the names of guys I go yard against," and then did it. Walked up and hit a home run to put him ahead, and the dugout was just going crazy. And it's, you know, in your story in the Roundhouse, you talked about he's had this history of saying things with confidence and then making them happen. And there were moments in that season when he was that guy. I mean, all those guys contributed. There were a lot of good players, but he seemed to be the one at the biggest moments that had that something special that it took.
I know you're a big baseball historian, so you'll be a good one to, I guess we already talked about this a couple days ago. Eddie Stanky, he's the precursor that we can come up with. Have a guy who was a big league manager and then became a college coach, and Eddie Stanky coached at South Alabama. I think this has been back in the 70s. Yeah. I asked Eric about this today. He didn't have any names at all. Have you come up with anybody else that's made this kind of
transition? I haven't, no. And I haven't really Googled it or dug real hard. I just haven't had time. But when you mentioned that one, and that was kind of a unique situation because Eddie Stanky had managed the Cardinals and the White Sox and been in the big leagues for a long time, and he'd kind of retired, and I don't know what led him to, he was kind of asked to start a baseball program at South Alabama and did that and was successful there, but that's the only other time I know of. There, as you and I discussed, there have been a lot of former big league players who have been successful college coaches, but I don't know of another former big league manager.
I guess I would write that off to college baseball still relatively young, and when I say young, 20 years, 30 years, is a real prominent sport where there's a lot of attention and resources and big salaries paid. I guess that would be, that'd be my first explanation of why.
Yeah, and the last thing you mentioned, salary, I can't imagine there was ever a time until recently when you could go from being a major league manager to coaching in college and come anywhere close to making the same kind of money.
And there seems to be no shortage of Major League Baseball jobs. You can always seem to go somewhere and become a, you know, a roving instructor or manage this or help out with that. There's such a big industry. I would guess maybe those are the reasons. Eric was last in college, 1989. What's changed in your view in college baseball over that time? What kind of, you know, challenges and new things is he going to face?
Maybe the biggest one is that I think there are more schools, and I would say even use the term prominent or large schools that care about baseball now that maybe didn't so much 30 years ago. And so recruiting is more difficult, I think, for a Wichita State because schools around them, like a Nebraska, for instance, and a couple of others, have put more into their baseball programs and are signing some of those guys that Wichita State used to. So that would be one thing. Wichita State is in an even more difficult conference than it was. I mean, they're in one of the top five or six conferences in the country for baseball, so that's a challenge. But it's been interesting. The feel I have is that Wichita State is still enough of a name that they can still recruit here. You can still get talented players here. And then the other thing I think that I've seen that's interesting is that you occasionally saw scouting reports 20 and 30 years ago. Somebody would come up with something. But now they're extensive, and everybody has them. And if you've got a guy that doesn't do something well, everybody knows about it, and they're going to try to pitch to that and that sort of thing. And I think with Eric's experience in the big leagues, I mean, that's not unlike what he's always dealt with in pro ball, but I think there's more of that element now in college baseball than there used to be.
You led me into my next question. You've traveled now the American for the last two seasons. What's been your observations about how that's different and how that's maybe changed, you know, the Wichita State's place in the baseball world being a member of that conference?
It's just, and I think it's kind of what we've seen in men's basketball too. There's just there's a higher level overall of player, team-to-team depth of players. And the Missouri Valley this year was right behind the American as a conference in baseball. But I think it will be that way more consistently in the American. Some of it is where schools are located. If you're in Orlando or Tampa, you got a lot of players within reach. And that's true a lot of these other places, too. And so they're in fertile recruiting grounds. They have longtime baseball reputations and programs established, and so it's just going to be easier for them to maintain their programs at a high level than some of the Missouri Valley schools, for instance, and that the Shockers have played in the past. But again, I haven't felt like Wichita State was just completely overmatched talent-wise over these first couple of years that they've been in the league either.
What's been the reaction as you've been out and about over the last day or two, or getting phone calls, texts from people? What kind of feedback have you gotten about Eric coming back?
I think people are just giddy right now. And part of it is, I think everyone wanted it to be a member of the Shocker family, someone who had been through the program, who understood what it's about, what it was built on, what it's always represented. And you know, it's interesting with the former players, there's sort of a long time, you know, a 30-year fraternity where the guys that played here continued to follow the program after they left and took pride in it and knew who the other players were in future generations, if you will. And so I think that the excitement is not just about the fact that it is a former Shocker coming back, but Eric Wedge as a player here always represented to the highest level what every one of them believes Shocker baseball is all about and what it should be.
He said he wants to wear number 22, which is no surprise. How about was he part of the card games on the bus trips? Will he slide back into that role? Do you remember?
I don't remember that he was to any great degree, although I think practically everybody was back then to kill time on the buses. I think he probably has a unique ability. I'm just going to guess that he is going to be, the players will feel like he's a player's coach, that he's on their side, but he's not going to get to be anybody's friend per se while they're still playing here. I think there's going to be a level of toughness and a little bit of separation there that, you know, it'll be pleasant, it'll be congenial, but the standards will be high and you're going to be expected to work hard and do the things you're supposed to do.
No question. Mike, thank you very much for your time. This has been the Roundhouse Podcast with Paul Solentrop of Strategic Communications and Mike Kennedy. We appreciate you listening. Thank you.